This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
The UK's digital tech scene is accelerating, and the proof is in the Unicorn Kingdom Pathfinder Awards. This year, we celebrate the next generation of pioneering startups that are shaping the tech landscape of tomorrow. The UK is a thriving ecosystem with access to global talent, cutting-edge research, and unparalleled investment opportunities. Your big idea belongs here. Visit great.gov.uk/UKPA to learn more.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates, fly better.
Hello and welcome to World Business Report on the BBC World Service. Will Bain with you today. Great as always to have your company. Coming up on the programme, why the emergence of a Chinese AI champion has sent financial markets tumbling. We'll tell you much more about DeepSeek and why it seems to have many global investors rattled in just a moment. Also on the programme today, with tariffs narrowly avoided for now, what impact would a 25% levy on imports from Colombia have on US businesses? We'll hear from one sector over the next half hour too. And the promise to electrify billions of homes across sub-Saharan Africa.
I used to close the food kiosk at 6 in the evening because there was no electricity. But right now, as we speak, I'm still busy and I won't close it until midnight.
Yeah, much more on what's being called the Mission 300 Summit in Tanzania that hopes to lay the financial groundwork to electrify 300 million homes across southern Africa. That's before we leave you today here on World Business Report. Let's get right to it, though. The world of artificial intelligence, a sector that its proponents believe could transform our working lives beyond recognition. It's in part why President Trump has pledged to put American government financial muscle behind its tech champions to push and try and lead the race into developing ever more sophisticated AI tools and the chips and other hardware that powers them. He described the investment as a show of confidence in America under his leadership.
Together, these world-leading technology giants are announcing the formation of Stargate. So put that name down in your books, because I think you're going to hear a lot about it in the future. A new American company that will invest $500 billion at least in AI infrastructure in the United States and very rapidly, creating over 100,000 American jobs almost immediately. This monumental undertaking is a resounding declaration of confidence in America's potential under a new president.
That confidence, though, perhaps rocked today, slightly at least, by something of a plot twist, with news that the Chinese AI app DeepSeek has overtaken ChatGPT, part-funded by Microsoft, American rival, of course, and others, to become the top-rated free application on Apple's App Store in the US, UK and China. It's news that has immediately caused huge waves on financial markets on Monday as well, and doubtless in the boardrooms and seats of government power right round the world too. Our economics editor, Faisal Islam, is in the studio with me. Faisal, great to have you on the programme as always.
Good to be here.
This morning, in the kind of all hands, if we peel back the BBC business news curtains, in the all hands kind of meeting we have first thing in the morning, you passionately, confidently said, this is by some distance the most significant business and economic story today. Why?
Well, not just business and economics. There's actually sort of diplomatic and world implications. I would argue if the narrative that's coming out of China and being believed in part in the markets turns out to be true. I will take you back to that picture of just a week ago. It's a long time in world politics and economics, isn't it? Where you had that just show of economic supremacy, frankly, from the USA, of Trump, and in the inauguration photo, those five astonishing tech leaders. And then the next day, you had just what you've demonstrated, which was that $500 billion Stargate announcement. Job done. Trump, unified government, the US tech firms behind them, impregnable lead, you would think. And indeed, some of those leaders or some of the executives in those companies have been saying things like, we're 4 years ahead of any other economy. Now, all this is playing out whilst we're at the World Economic Forum. By the end of the World Economic Forum, a bit of a mood shift, actually. Mm. People had started to talk and had played with this DeepSeek model.
And what were they telling you about it?
They were like, this is on a par with OpenAI, but is a fraction, so a fraction of the cost.
And it has a ton of other connotations, right? Because of the type of chips that are in it, because of the restrictions that the Americans have put on European and Korean and other and American chips that are able to be in it. Is that part of the story here as well? What the kind of components within it, the people working on it, that kind of thing
On a very brutal level, the story that's driving the stock market right now, which is an exponential amount of these chips requiring an exponential amount of electricity, is what's going to drive AI mainly from America exported around the world. That's the story. This has, at the very least, asked questions of that model, and some might argue have sort of popped a bit of a bubble in terms of that thinking, which is not to say that it's going to end up supreme in any battle, but there's a real competitor there. And some, you know, if they can do this much more cheaply without the chips, that is why you're seeing this sort of market reaction. And there's an important backstory. This hasn't come out of nowhere. The precise sourcing is quite interesting. I think we'll get onto that in a moment. But China is obviously chucking a lot of effort at this. And when you think about frontier science, one assumes that Silicon Valley and that sort of iterative, scientific, free market, open technique is going to yield you the best result. But it may just be that in AI, the number of PhDs matter. Obviously, the number of chips, and that has been restricted, but also the availability of data to train on. And it may just be, and I'll put this delicately, it may just be that societies that have a greater control over data have an advantage that can't be replicated in Western societies.
Let's come to that in a moment and hold that thought, because that's one of the interesting things I think about what it tells about what might happen next and what responses might be. But we'll come to a little bit more about the company too, because we've got Duncan Clark of BDA China, normally based in Shanghai, an expert on all things Chinese tech investment, who's going to tell us a little bit more about this company. But Colleen McHugh, also with us, investment consultant to Wealthify, looking over the financial markets for us today on World Business Report. And Colleen, just run us through then the kind of latest, the big ups and downs, because what have we had? Wall Street open in the United States for an hour or so now. What's been the movement?
Yeah, listen, it's a sea of red. US markets are really tumbling today. We got an early indication, Will, from the futures market, which at one point saw potentially the NASDAQ opening 5% lower. Some of that pessimism has abated a little bit, but we're still seeing sort of NASDAQ down about 2.5%, S&P down 1.5%. And we're seeing, you know, treasuries rally. You're seeing dollar yen rally. So you're seeing the typical flight to safety. I mean, I have to agree what Fazal was saying. I mean, this is really potentially quite game changing, and it's going to have a significant potential, if it's true, impact on some of these US mega caps, particularly the ones they're reporting in the next few days.
Absolutely. The NASDAQ, the one, if people are at home and want to kind of keep an eye on this story of the week, the NASDAQ, the one to watch, because it's where a lot of those companies are listed, including Nvidia, Colleen, whose shares are absolutely tanking it right now.
Yeah, down over 12%. We've seen sort of ASML in Europe down.
ASML, an interesting company. They're Dutch. Yeah. They kind of make these machines that kind of print the chips to kind of really chips. Oversimplify it.
Yeah, absolutely. Negative down 12-13% at the moment. It's just, I think, Will, the challenge here is that, you know, these AI companies, these tech companies in the US are just priced for perfection. It only needs a little spark, and whether or not DeepSeek's open source model is that little spark or a little bit more, that's all it needs to send these stocks tanking.
Fine, so just break some of that down for us. How much of this is a, as you say, kind of DeepSeek Chinese economy story? How much of it also is a, I guess what a lot of people in financial markets have been talking about, potentially, as Colleen's saying, the kind of overvaluation of some of those big American tech stocks, the kind of rally that the S&P 500 in the US has been on. But also when you look at a European company like ASML, has badged itself, right, as being able to do something particularly special, unique almost, and there's been lots of restrictions as a result around it. Does it now throw up questions, I guess, about, okay, how unique, how special are some of these companies and what they're doing?
Essentially, they've managed to operate with a kind of like a less advanced set of chips much more efficiently they've sort of reprogrammed it. And then the other angle on this is that, you know, this is a hedge fund's side project by all accounts. What a side project it would be. And the results are comparable. I mean, there's various ways that you can calculate this using kind of statistical techniques. But I think all you need to look at is the X and social media feeds of the great Silicon Valley kind of investors and CEOs, all of whom have felt the need to kind of comment and acknowledge. Nobody's sort of rubbishing it. I'll just put it like that. And then it raises a bigger question, really. You know, when you have had people at some of the top mega caps saying things like, we're 4 years ahead, suddenly you're like, well, hang on, maybe it's only a couple of weeks ahead. And that raises some fundamental questions. I mean, how this is now responded to and the difference between the US and Europe, you would imagine if they're going to ban TikTok, where are they going to put an AI? What are the Americans going to do with an AI model that is competitive with their own
and by
AI
its very
models?
Nature is gathering information. I mean, that's what these models do.
I'll just put it like that. And then you take Europe, or let's just take the UK, for example, where the UK has been, you know, the Chancellor of the Exchequer went to China to say, you know, we can do business. We're not going to be pressurized necessarily to artificially diminish the role of China. You know, what's the message to the Chinese? Is it, we want to import your T-shirts, we want to import your TVs, we want to import your electric cars? We definitely don't want to import your, you know, Huawei 5G telephone networks. Where does an AI model sit in that? I would suggest it was perhaps closer to the latter part of that list that I just read out than the former. But let's see, it's all happened so quickly that we don't actually know. And then, you know, others would say in Silicon Valley, this is great. This is great for competition. It's exactly what we need. We've seen people like Yann LeCun, who is the Meta chief AI strategist, sort of praise it. There is an angle here that doesn't really matter about where it comes from. It's the open source element to this, which the Chinese have basically published the entire model. You know, perhaps cognizant of some of these questions we're asking right now, they've published the whole model for everyone to have a look at, which is not the business model. I mean, even that alone could create some problems for the mega caps seeking to derive mega profits from their innovation in terms of the chatbots.
Yeah, of how they work and what they're looking at. Well, let's get a bit more on DeepSeek themselves. Duncan Clark, as I say, standing by. Duncan, if you've not heard him on the programme before, chairman of the advisory firm BDA China, normally in Shanghai, speaking to us from Hong Kong. Duncan, something of an expert in all things Chinese tech, authored a number of books, including Around the Tech Billionaire, Jack Ma and his firm, Alibaba, in the past. Duncan, always great to have you on the programme. Thanks for being back with us. No, it's late where you are.
No worries.
DeepSeek, Faisal says they didn't come out overnight. You give us a bit of the biography of them then.
Yeah, well, another Hangzhou-based company, you know, like Alibaba. The guy, Liang Wenfeng, he's actually from the south, from Guangdong, but he was in Zhejiang University, that coastal province near Shanghai. And, you know, he's turning 40 this year. But as you said, he's sort of, it's like a self-funded project. I mean, he had his, you know, he applied the AI to trade and made money and then used that money to build DeepSeek. And it didn't exactly come out of nowhere, but it was one of many that was floating around. But my goodness, yeah, this is, as Faisal was saying, this has really hit home very much with these inflated U.S. valuations and a sort of generally underestimating China because of political and other reasons. And wow, you know, so
and
this has had
I presume it tells impact. Us something about the chip manufacturing. And, you know, there were serious questions, weren't there, about could China find homegrown sources of these things under pressure from, in particular, U.S. restrictions on access to what we thought were the most powerful, the chips that you needed to run these, what they call large language models, models that do thinking and speaking in AI. That also doesn't seem to be the case. That talks to something down the kind of tech chain in China as well, doesn't it?
A little bit. I mean, Liang Wenfeng had obviously, you know, made some money. He'd actually stockpiled some of the higher end, you know, NVIDIA chips, but also crucially matched to the sort of lower end ones that are not subject to the same sanctions and using software and probably access to the data we just heard about. He's sort of, you know, chicken-wired sort of put this thing together in a way that has surprised everyone. And, you know, by the way, this is self-funded. It's not like the government was, to our knowledge, plowing money in. He was received by the prime minister a few days ago. Now we know why, because this is very, you know, strategic for China to suddenly sort of a bit of a poke in the eye after the announcement that we heard at the beginning.
And we know, we've had you on the program talking about a number of those tech titans from China before, and Faisal mentioned one of them that are perhaps a good cautionary tale here for DeepSeek, Huawei. Do you think they'll have learned lessons from that in terms of preparing for what some of those responses that Faisal was talking about might be in terms of whether it be stockpiling chips, finding those people, that talent, that brain base to keep working on this going forward if the US decides to respond again?
Exactly. I mean, you know, sanctions may hinder progress, you know, in the near term, but we can see that they can actually really drive innovation and, you know, chutzpah, if you will, longer term. You know, that's why some of the Silicon Valley, you know, entrepreneurs are embracing this. But it's also, you know, with these very inflated valuations, it's going to hit quite a few of them, you know, from NVIDIA, as we've seen ASML, even Siemens Electric's, you know, and just the power side, that's down 20%. You know, this whole sort of, if you will, AI, energy, industrial complex that has been emerging is suddenly looking a little dicey. And this is not the first time China's done this. We've seen this before the chipset side for handsets. So China's, you know, enjoying this right now, but it's not really driven by the government, but it's certainly very handy.
And Faisal, that's taken us to kind of tariffs and responses, broaden it out, because we're going to talk some more tariffs in the second half of the program here when you leave us. But what do you think it tells us, if we know anything about the Trump administration, about what comes next in all of this?
I think what's been really telling in the past week has been the absence of China as the preliminary target for the tariff weapon, as it were. You would have thought it would have been first up. But, you know, we've sort of accepted now that he's most annoyed with Canada and Mexico. But, you know, it is worth unpacking and just sort of standing back and thinking, hang on, this is literally the two trade partners that he signed or renegotiated a deal with in his first term. Then up pops Denmark as the target because of Greenland. And then out of nowhere over the weekend, which I'm sure you're going to go on to talk about, is Colombia. And you sort of get this impression, this notion that he just sees it as a weapon. The tariff is like a gun. And this gets really quite interesting. What trade ministers, European trade ministers, are trying to work out is, what does he want to use this for? Mm. Is he trying to use it as geopolitical leverage, self-evidently? Is he trying to do it really to correct deficits and eradicate them? That's what he says. That's where they're scurrying around trying to come up with lists of American goods that we're going to buy in order to sort of give Donald Trump wins. It's extraordinary stuff, right? But the bigger point here is the penny dropped, I think, speaking to me privately at the end of Davos, a leading minister of trade in Europe said, I think he just wants to raise money. And if you go by his speech to the World Economic Forum on Thursday, where he said he'd raise trillions of dollars, that only works with a universal tariff.
Yeah.
So, but then those three targets are incoherent. Yeah. You can't solve all those problems with the same. So, you know, and that's not even to mention the potential inflationary impact. So,
absolutely. Faisal, thanks so much as always. Thanks to Duncan Clark of BDA in China, staying up very late for us there in Hong Kong as well. You're with World Business Report on the BBC World.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates. Fly better.
Service. And as Faisal says, the potential looming trade war between the US and Colombia appears for now to at least be on hold. What was all behind it? World Business Report's Gideon Long in Colombia sent us this report.
This whole spat started over the weekend when Donald Trump said that he wanted to return 2 plane loads of Colombian migrants from the United States back to Colombia. And the key thing is he said he wanted to send them in military planes. And the government in Colombia, led by the left-wing president Gustavo Petro, said that it had no objection to the migrants coming back to Colombia, but that it didn't want them sent in military planes. It said that that was treating them like criminals and that it lacked dignity and respect. So that was the start of the spat. Trump responded to that by saying he would impose 25% tariffs on Colombian goods coming into the United States. And he said that if there was no cooperation from the Colombian government, that that would be raised to 50% in a week's time. Gustavo Petro responded again. This was all on social media on Sunday, saying that Colombia would impose 25% tariffs on US goods coming into Colombia. So that was all on Sunday. And then on Sunday evening, there was a statement from the White House in which the White House said that Colombia had essentially given in to all of the US demands and that it had accepted that the migrants would be sent back to Colombia. So for now, at least, the dispute seems to have been diffused, but the Trump administration has said that it still might use those tariffs if it doesn't feel the Colombian government is cooperating fully. So that was over the weekend. It was about tariffs, but actually at its root, this dispute was about migration and the return of migrants to Latin America. And it certainly got people in Colombia talking about their country's relationship with the United States. On Saturday, I was in the capital, Bogota, and I spoke to one woman about how she expected that relationship to look over the next 4 years.
Hola, mi nombre es Gloria Marcela Rubino.
Hello, my name is Gloria Marcela Rubino. I am 45 years old. I live in Colombia, Bogota. At the moment, I am unemployed. Obviously, all the migrants are going to be deported and there will be no opportunities because if they go to the United States, the visa will be much more difficult. So it is difficult for all migrants from Latin America and therefore from Colombia. On the other hand, I also find Trump is right about the issue of migrants because of labor issues. It happens to us in Colombia. With all the migrants we have from abroad, the majority of Venezuelans take away many job opportunities from us, since they work for less and then the businessmen prefer foreigners. Well, that is good for the businessmen. But for us, the people, well, the fact is that ordinary people are unemployed and it is difficult.
Es un agravante.
Well, Business Report's Gideon Long reporting from Colombia there. Well, Christine Bolt is Executive Vice President at AFIF, America's Flower Connection. She's joining us live from Miami, Florida. Christine, thanks for being with us on World Business Report.
You're welcome. Thank you.
How significant is Colombia then in terms of your supply chain?
So I represent the flower importers for the United States, and Colombia is our number one source. We get 60 to 65% of our stems. Last year, we had more than 9 billion stems that entered the United States, and about 65% of those were from Colombia.
So was it a bit of a sigh of relief come sort of what, Monday morning, late Sunday night, when for now, this was all averted?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we were already in the midst of Valentine's shipping, and to have the unknown of 25% tariffs was going to be detrimental to the flower industry in the United States.
You yourself, of course, and the organization are in Florida. The president's now kind of adopted home state. Do you think he's listening to sectors like yours, that he understands that when he's putting his calculations together, do you think? Or do you think you need to shout a bit louder?
No, unfortunately, I don't think he understands some of the significance of imported trade to South Florida and to Florida. Florida is such a significant importing state for the United States. Flowers are the number one import into Miami, but we also have fruits and vegetables, herbs, fish. So there's a lot of other agricultural products that are coming in here.
Would jobs be at risk with a tariff like that, 25 or 50%?
Oh, absolutely. Jobs would be at risk. And of course, consumers would ultimately pay more for it because the flower industry is a penny industry. We don't have those kind of margins to accept those tariffs without passing it on.
Danger averted for now. Good luck in the run up to Valentine's Day. I know it's always a busy time for your industry. And I'm sure we'll have you on again in the future, Christine, as well. Christine, thanks so much for your time today. Christine Bolt there, the Executive Vice President of America's Flower Connection, as Christine was explaining, represents those importers of cut flowers. You're with World Business Report on the BBC World Service. Now, more than 600 million people living across southern Africa live, work, and try and run their businesses without access to the electricity grid. It often means they're forced to use expensive generators or dangerous kerosene lamps when trying to go about their daily lives. So some of the pledges being made at the Mission 300 conference being held in the Tanzanian capital, Dar es Salaam, this week feel pretty significant. Several heads of state, for example, will be meeting with company bosses there, more than 1,000 of them, and others to discuss an ambitious plan to ensure half of those 600 million people, some 300 million, get power within the next 6 years. Miriam Hamisi is a food kiosk owner in rural central Tanzania who was given access to electricity for the first time about a year ago. She told Peter Masembi from the World Services Africa Daily podcast about what impact that had had on her and her business.
I have done this business for 4.5 years now. I used to close the food kiosk at 6 in the evening because there was no electricity. But right now, as we speak, I'm still busy and I won't close it until midnight. I now have fridges in my shop. Before this, any remaining food would go bad, but now I can preserve it in the fridge. And I also have cold drinks for customers and they like it. I have 2 children. The youngest is 2 and the eldest is 8 years old. My children could not study well as I'd wish because of darkness.
Mariam, there is this Africa Energy Summit taking place in Dar es Salaam. How crucial is that, according to your own experience?
It is very important for everyone to have electricity. Because, as you can see, it's just over a year since we were connected with power in this village. But it has brought with it life-transforming benefits for us. Our dispensaries now have electricity, and that is important. We feel safe walking home in the evening, and security too has improved.
Well, Wale Shonabere is Director, Energy Financial Solutions Policy and Regulations, the African Development Bank, one of those who's putting the funding in to try and kickstart all of this project. And he told the Newsdays, Rob Young, a little bit more.
The barrier is not simply money. Money is obviously an important part, but political alignment, the understanding of the governments around some key pillars that need to be in place in order to be able to attract the financing. So that's what we're talking about at Mission 300. We've laid out five pillars that the heads of governments are going to sign up to, and these range from having least cost electricity generation and having competitive procurement to driving distributed renewable energy into more remote areas.
And just so we're clear on what distributed renewable energy is, this is solar panels on individual shops and businesses' roofs.
Indeed, these are off-grid connections, and often cheaper to connect than extending the transmission lines, because connection charges are expensive and not all of the communities can afford them. So we have cheaper solutions now that we can roll out more quickly. Things like regional interconnections, which are extremely important, because you find that the landlocked countries often have to pay more for their electricity, whereas if we connect them with other countries with cheaper sources such as hydro and geothermal, then they have cheaper electricity, which they can afford. And lastly, we have to reform our utilities, because the utilities are the buyers of the electricity. So if the private sector is going to come in, they need to have sustainable, well-run off-takers. Private sector has a huge role to play.
And so that's how you get the 300 million Africans connected to electricity within the next 6 years, which is the challenge that governments and organizations like yours have set. It's not about putting up power lines, it's about getting solar panels on as many roofs as possible.
It's not only solar panels, but solar has a huge role to play, because Africa is endowed with very good irradiation. But you also have wind, you have geothermal, you have hydro. And in some parts of Africa, there's still an abundance of gas. So you need all of that together in order to be able to provide reliable, sustainable electricity to our communities. So it's about this holistic view and motivating private sector financing to also come in. But you need an enabling environment, and that's why governments are so important as well.
That's Wale Shonabere of the Africa Development Bank speaking to Newsday's Rob Young. Rob Young, of course, an alumni of this programme as well. A great episode of Africa Daily on that this morning by the team as well. If you want to hear much more of that, just search for the Africa Daily podcast wherever you get yours from. Thanks to Colleen McHugh from Wealthify and to you for listening to World Business Report.
An Bord erwarten Sie Bars, Spa-Duschen sowie preisgekrönte Bordunterhaltung. Es ist also kein Wunder, dass Emirates als beste Fluggesellschaft der Welt ausgezeichnet wurde. Wir fliegen Sie zu über 140 Reisezielen. Und mit unseren Interline-Partnern weltweit bieten wir Ihnen Anschlussflüge zu weiteren 1700 Städten auf 6 Kontinenten. Wenn wir behaupten, dass wir eine der größten internationalen Fluggesellschaften sind, meinen wir, wir bringen Sie an Ihr Wunschziel. Jetzt buchen auf emirates.de. Fly Emirates. Fly better.